Peter Harrison. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013 with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Peter Harrison describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch Heavy Horse. Peter is a retired horse auctioneer. The recording was made by Jeff Hallett, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was the 8th of August 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Balsham, Cambridgeshire. The duration of the recording is about 24 minutes.
Interested in horses for a long time?
Oh yes, I had a pony when I was too big to have one, too small to have one really. Right. The pony was too big for me even though it was a Shetland.
Yes.
But yeah, all my life, and I was brought up on a farm in Northumberland.
Right.
And my family have been farmers for generations.
So your father was a farmer?
My father's a farmer. My grandfather goes back, I've got the date of, yeah. Goes back to 16 something or other.
May I just ask what your date of birth is?
1710-32.
Thank you. And you were saying you're all brought up on the farm, so what would be, you had horses working on the farm then?
Before the war.
And what breed would they have been?
Shires.
Yes.
They were Shires. We had a dairy farm.
So which part of the country was it?
Northumberland.
Northumberland.
It's not north of Newcastle. Yeah.
So, do you remember doing things with the horses as a child? Or?
I do. I remember we had them during the war as well. I remember being little, and the farm was at least a mile long, and it was a dairy farm, so we had grazing and hay and all that sort of thing. And I remember the men putting me on the horse's neck, just behind this by the collar, and slapping the horse on the rump, and off it went home to the stable. They weren't with me. There was no health and safety nonsense there.
No.
If I fell off.
How old would you have been then?
Born 32, it would be about 38, 6.
It's about 6 years old.
5 or 6,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
The only problem was, when we got to the stable, the door was quite low, and if the door had been left open, I had to watch out. Duck. I always just managed, but it always did frighten me.
And could you get off then?
It was too high. I was frightened to get off.
Right.
I was quite little. I might have been younger than 6.
Yes.
One tale I can tell you, when I was quite little, my mother lost me, and she found me in a stackyard halfway up a ladder, and I said to her, "Don't touch the bloody ladder." And Parrish, absolutely livid, she gave my father such a stick that the men had been teaching me to swear. So I was brought up on a farm. And
so you didn't have a horse pond that the horse went to first?
No.
That was lucky.
No, nothing like that. No, I couldn't swim. No, but we had 2 or 3 shires, and then we father got rid of the cows, and because of war, agricultural people said he'd got to plough out half the farm. And he said he couldn't run a decent dairy herd and arable at the time. And then we got tractors. But we still had horses during the war because we had to tell in prisoners of war at hay time.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, the hay was made the old-fashioned way with what we called pikes in Northumberland, which were tall heaps of, you probably know, tall heaps of hay. We swept it. Father had a sweep, which he fixed onto the front of a lorry, which he drove, and into heaps, and then they put it round, and then we made pikes and that sort of thing. And the Italians had to bring them back to the stack on bogies, what we call bogies, which were tipping trailers with a winch on the front.
See.
And they would race from the stackyard to the hayfield. And I thought that was terribly exciting, because I was on one of the bogies, encouraging them to gallop the horses, which did not go down well. With my parents.
They could actually winch the whole stack.
Yeah, you put a rope round. You had a winch on the front with a metal handle, and you put a rope round the back of the thing, tipped the bogey up under the pike, and winched it up. And these pikes held about half a ton of hay, I suppose.
And did they have little hats on while they were in the field?
No. We that's
the Irish.
They were just done with a fork and tied down with hay. Ropes made from the rope from the pike. We'd pulled the hay out of the bottom of the pike and twisted it and turned it into a rope and put it right over the top. So we didn't use binder twine or string or anything.
Did you have a gadget for twisting the?
No, just did by hand.
Really?
It was quite farming is quite old fashioned.
I think there's a thing called a wimbrel, like a little hook with a handle on you.
No, we didn't know that. And then later on we got a After then, we got rid of the horses and we had tractors.
Yeah, but you would have been, as you got a bit older, actually handling and working the horses yourself.
Oh, I couldn't handle them. I mean, I could have a little ride home, and that's I was too little.
Oh, I see.
But I remember it. That's the only thing.
Do you remember the horses going?
Yes, I do. They were father sold them. I don't know, to somebody took them away. Yeah. I don't think they went to slaughter.
Was that an emotional sort of time? Or?
I can't really remember. All I know is that they were lovely. And my sister, who's 4 years younger than me, we had them. We had a green near the house, and we had that fenced off for the horses at one stage. And I went and got her one day because she was standing under the belly of one of the horses, and she would only be about 2 and a half, I suppose. And I was frightened she'd be trodden on, but of course they didn't. No. No, it was lovely. Mm. But then we became. But when I was older, I mean, I had ponies and hunters, and I used to hunt 3 days a fortnight.
Did you?
And I had to earn a living. Working for my father wasn't profitable.
Did you go into the auction business then? Or?
Yeah, I did. I worked my father part time, then I went. When I was studying part-time and working for a local firm of auctioneers, selling livestock. Livestock's always been my interest. I always felt one tractor was very much like another, but one animal is not like another, and one horse certainly isn't. Mm. But of course I had to change, but that was my, was what I liked. Mm. That's why I started the horse selling game. I used to hunt in Northumberland. And we moved up and lived in Wooler for a year or two, working for an auction firm there. And I used to hunt, used to ride other people's horses. I had my sister's up there for a while, and then we sold that because she was working. And then I used to get other people's horses to ride, usually ones that were awkward. And, right. Oh, Peter, would you just, like a day's hunting, yes. When we got this young horse, do you think, because I used to bring horses over from Ireland when I was working on the farm, my father, just broken. Mm-hmm. Hunt them for a season or perhaps two, and then sell them and have another. So I had one or two interesting animals. But I always loved that. I mean, I really loved my... All I wanted to do, really, was hunt hounds. That's really what I wanted to do. Now all I want to do is shoot pheasants.
You were saying about the farm being in the family. I'm just thinking back, was there any sort of memory of the... In the First World War time, of the horses being taken off to the...
Yeah, my grandfather apparently made quite a lot of money by providing horses for the army. Right. Now, whether they were for gun carriages, mm-hmm. or whether... I think they were heavy horses rather than for the cavalry.
Yes.
But my family have always been involved in farming and animals. And there's a family tale about a great-grandfather who always... horse was always described as a wrong'un. And he was fined in, I think... in Newcastle for riding dangerously down the road. So my family always been a little difficult. But that's the way it's... And father used to tell me tales about horse-drawn carriages and things, and we had a trap on the farm, which I'd never seen used, but we did, and it was just there, left over. Mm. And we had... I remember when I was very little, father had a horse which actually was for the trap. It was about 16 hands, but... It had got old and he just kept it because it was a favourite. Mm. But I don't remember much about that at all. But lots of family stories about them.
What sort of numbers of horses would you be dealing with at the sales?
About 100. Varied from 70 or 80 to 100, sometimes more. I had to actually restrict the numbers because we didn't have the facilities for more than that. Jeez. And also it was... It was enough. It was a question of getting the entries and getting the catalogue done and getting everything in time, and then hoping to God that they hadn't sold them or you'd got something else in the way you'd advertise in the catalogue. A 16-hand hunter, they brought a sort of Shetland pony because they'd sold the hunter and wanted to get rid of the registered pony.
And did you just sort of have a pen of horses and then someone from the firm to handle them, or were the owners there?
They were all in stalls or cattle pens, mm-hmm. all tied up properly. We had sheds converted to hold them, right. and some were The better ones were in little boxes, or small boxes. I say little, but they were big enough, but they weren't something a horse could live in. And then there was, I did employ staff who would run them up if required, but mostly I preferred the owner to do it. A, they knew it, and B, it was their job to sort of show the animal off in its paces rather than one of the men just going around because he was paid so much a day.
So did they go into sort of doing the horses up ready for the show, what I call the show ring?
Yes. No, not my staff, no.
No, the owners.
But the owners, oh yes, they did. I mean, the heavy horses particularly would have the ribbons and plaited manes and tails and that sort of thing. The other ponies, some came rough and some came nicely turned out, just depending on what they were and who was selling them. Mostly they were nicely turned out. Mostly. I can't think of many that came. So we used to have sometimes unbroken animals, of course, sometimes it was very concerning when the export for ponies was on the go. We had lots of moorland ponies and things just brought in and sold to go for slaughter.
Yes,
I didn't care a lot for that, but I'm in business to, or was in business to, sell horses and. It was. Sometimes people would say to me, well, it mustn't go for slaughter, and I'd say, well, you can't tell. The highest bidder gets it, and if he happens to be a slaughterman, I can't tell you. I cannot say to him in public, I'm not taking your bid because you're a slaughterman. That was sometimes a bit of a problem.
Tell me about the bell at auctions. Because did you have bells at the auction to let people know what was happening?
We rang the bell to start the sale.
Yes, where does that come from? Is that a very old tradition?
Yes, it's an old custom. In Cambridge Cattle Market years ago, there was a bell at each sale ring. There were three or four sale rings, and there was a bell outside, and a man tolled the bell at the time of the auction. And then they got pinched, because they were probably bronze or cast iron. But we always had a handbell. We always rang a handbell to start the auction. So everyone knew, even when we had the public address.
It happens all. I go to Campsie Ash Market quite a lot.
Oh yes. Yes.
And do you remember? Was there much emphasis on the actual breed of horse when they were being auctioned? Say the heavy horses.
Well, yes, we didn't get a lot of heavy horses.
No.
And I always liked to put the breeding in a catalogue if I had it, if it was provided. But if it was just sold by a dealer as a crossbred or a Shire or a Persian or whatever, not very many of those, or a Suffolk or a cross Suffolk, no. But I did have to celebrate selling them for 25 years, I thought it would be nice to have a special sale dedicated to the Suffolk horses as well as the rest.
Right.
And I did, but we had a disappointing entry. We gave a prize money and rosettes, and we had a judge from the Suffolk horse. I can't remember when it was. It was way back in the late 70s, early 80s. It must have been mid-80s, because I started selling horses there about 66, 68, I can't remember. A year after I came to Cambridge, I started the horse sales, and I sold them there for, well, until 1992. And I remember having one woman came with her daughter, and she said, "Good Lord, are you still selling horses? My father brought me and bought a pony here in 1967. I felt terribly old.
Is this with Cheffins?
Yes.
Which firm?
We were Grain and Chalk, and then we changed Cheffins, Grain and Chalk, and then and now it's Cummins.
But it's, no, it's Cheffins.
Cheffins. It was Cheffins, Grain and Cummins, and then finally it's got down just to Cheffins.
Was your sale yard actually in Cambridge?
In Cambridge, yes. It's now been developed.
Right.
It was the cattle market, and it was the centre. It was a bit of a pest because half the city children would come and play in the yard when there wasn't a cattle market on.
Yeah.
And of course it was a tourist attraction. People would come and see the cattle and that sort of thing. It was quite fun.
And was it a social scene as well?
It used to be. It used to, farmers would come every week and, yeah. and there was grain trading and that sort of thing, but that all changed in the late 60s, early 70s. Mm. It all changed. We had practically no stalls except a tea stall latterly, but there used to be people selling, well, agricultural tin sheets and tools and, and odds and sods, but that all went.
I think you said something about having to be careful to remember what you'd said.
Oh, yes.
Horses. Now, what? Tell me about that.
Well, that's to do with warranties and horses that were sold sound. Horses that were sold sound were given a warranty, and according to the conditions of sale, they had, about 4 days in which to phone up come in with a vet certificate to say that the animal which had been sold as sound was not sound. And then I would look at it, ride it, if it wasn't quite a ride or something like that. That used to be interesting. And then they'd get the money back. And I'd have to, of course, we hadn't paid out. We still kept the money. But of course, being horse sales, we had all sorts of people. We had some of the nicest people in the world to deal with, and some of the biggest bloody crooks you could find in a day's march. And sometimes people would say, oh, you said that was sound, and it isn't sound. Well, I hadn't said it was sound, so I had to record it. And then I could just play back the recording, or say, look, I've got a recording, shall I play it back? Yeah. And suddenly the horse was all right. So one had to be careful.
So that was off on a little pocket tape recorder or something?
It was a thing on my rostrum.
On the rostrum.
Yes. Right. And everyone knew. And I recorded. I didn't quite record the whole thing because a lot of times I switched it off after I'd sold the horse. But sometimes I would have an aside to my assistant who took the names and addresses that I perhaps didn't want to be heard.
Right. You said you actually rode a lot of the horses you were selling.
Well, only if they said they're not quite a ride. I'd go and ride them and see. And sometimes they were right. And if it looked really nasty, I'd get the purchaser to get up on it. I wasn't daft enough to get on to everyone. But I did have a bit of fun. I only fell off one, and that was in Bury St Edmunds. Some chap had bought a 13-2 pony, or 14 hands, I can't remember. It wasn't very big. On those meadows as you go out of Bury, either side of the main road going south. Anyway, he was grazing there, and I got onto it and it went perfectly well. It hadn't a very good mouth, but it was quiet enough to ride. And just at the end I said to him, there you are, it's perfectly all right. And I pulled the rein a bit hard, the thing whipped round and I fell straight off. But that was my fault and not, because it was a small thing. But that was what we did. Somebody got to ride them and I didn't want to pay anybody.
A lot of the horse dealing seems to have gone on with gypsy families.
Oh, absolutely.
Did they get involved in your sales as well?
Yes, they came, and I tried to keep most of them out, but I couldn't. Some of them I banned totally. The problem with them would be that one or two of them were as straight as dice. If you had to deal with them, you had a deal, and there was no problem at all, and I would trust them totally. Not with my life, but with a deal and with what we'd agreed. And one or two were very good, actually, and I could rely on them if there was a horse that was a bit difficult or something, and the people wanted to get rid of it. If they had it, that was... And I told them, or I told everybody, I just said, this is whatever. And that was never a problem. We did have a problem with them. I mean, there's a problem in East Anglia with them, and they come and camp on the market and that sort of thing. We had all that sort of problem. By and large, I managed. It was difficult, but then it is difficult dealing with people like that. But I sold for them and sold to them. And some of them, were perfectly all right. And I knew the ones that were and the ones that weren't. But I don't know that this is much help to you, really, because the Suffolk Horse Society, as I said to you, I feel that, because I've no records, I went through all my tapes and all I could find was sort of auctions of odds and sods, but not a Suffolk mentioned.
Well, this is all going into the... When it's calf. Yes, it's focused on the horses, but the whole picture is part of the story. And
I see.
People will get a lot more out of it than just us thinking about Suffolks, I think, in the long run.
Yeah.
And
have a biscuit, no biscuit?
Not for
no,
me,
thanks.
Well, we had one or two. If we had Suffolks for sale, well, one or two people who always came to see, and particularly that show and sale we had, I didn't sell the champion, so he didn't get the prize money, because that was one of the conditions. If you didn't sell it, I wasn't going to dish out whatever we were giving as prize money, which I can't remember now. But I did sell two or three, and there were several. Well, we didn't have much. I think we had a dozen or so. But they were jolly nice. I liked having it, but I had hoped that it would grow, but they just weren't there to grow, and there wasn't the market for them, really. Not for the sort of money that the people were hoping to get.
Mm. Generally, with people selling horses, did they tend to try and pull the wool over people's eyes? I mean, with the brown boot polish and this sort of thing coming
out? Oh, there was quite a bit of that. Quite a bit of that. Yeah. It's, it really wasn't my job to look for them. Well, it was. I mean, if I thought the horse wasn't right, I would say, I don't think this is quite up to the what it's told to be. I didn't hesitate to say that that's not right,
no.
And I'm withdrawing the warranty, but I didn't do it very often.
No.
I wanted people to know that, as far as I was concerned, it was a straight auction and genuine. What I said, I stuck to, and what I didn't say, and they made up, I couldn't be responsible for.
The opportunity for viewing, was that just on the day?
On the day, on the morning of the sale, from 8 o'clock in the morning until the sale finished, really.
Yes.
And they could ride them around the yard. It wasn't very big, and I had some jumps, two or three little jumps put up so that they could they could try them. And usually it was the owner who showed them off.
Mm.
So there was that facility. And of course, with the warranty, you see, they could take it home and test it out, and if it didn't answer the warranty, they got the money back.
Mm.
We didn't end up in court very often, like a couple of times. We didn't have. We had quite a lot of. We had some people who I knew when they bought it. I'd think, oh God, they'll be on the phone on Monday morning saying it's not sound. And I would hang on a bit, hoping that somebody else would bid against them. But that was.
It's particularly interesting what you're saying about dressing the horses for sale, the heavy horses, because I was saying that's really the foundation of all the showing that goes on in the show ring today, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Making the horse
look very, very good, and polishing the feet, and brushing out and putting sawdust into the feather,
yeah.
And that sort of thing.
Emphasising the power of the buttocks and all
yes,
that sort of thing.
Yes, yes. Some of them were beautifully turned out.
Yes.
If they were well-known or responsible or keen horse people, they turned them out well. They never came dirty.
Yeah.
Well,
that's fascinating. Thank you.
There was one person who used to come and always buy a horse, I don't know, and it was a chap called Roger and Cheryl Clark.
That's right.
You probably know them well.
Yes.
They've been on television and that sort of thing. They were very nice people.
Yeah, they were both of them very nice.
Yes, they were.
They're no longer married. They're married to other people now.
Oh, I see, yes.
But they're both very nice people.
Yes,
both well.
He was...
both of them still dealing in horses.
I think, yes, yes. They were nice, genuine people. It's nice to have people like that around. There were several like that around.
Very knowledgeable.
Mm. Mm. Oh, yes, very. I'm not sure whether didn't have something to do with the bloodhounds, the pack of bloodhounds. Yes, he did. I remember that.
They set up the East Anglian bloodhounds.
Yeah, because I remember him telling me that those bloody stupid anti-hunting people turned up one day to protest about the bloodhounds, which I think amused everybody. Because I told them over the PA what had happened, and everyone had a good laugh.
Is there anything else you think we should be?
I don't know.
You've covered things very well.
I don't think there's anything else I can honestly tell you that I think would be of interest.
Good.